1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
First I was afraid, I was petrified. Kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong, and weekly weights brought me along.
That was actually more nerve-wracking than any squat I've ever done.
That was good.
Welcome to episode 10 of Weekly Weights. I'm Will Berkman. With me is Alex Hayes, and with us is none other than Liz Craven.
Liz Craven is Australia's best ever raw powerlifter. Her best wilks is 531, which is a massive. She was a silver medalist in the 2017 RPF Worlds and had a squat record for about 1 minute of 156 at under 52, and her best total is 424 at under 52 kilos.
That's
and
right.
You're also a coach at Strength Syndicate?
Yes.
Cool.
My best total is 535 at 57s.
534.
Yep.
535. Out of curiosity, do you know how many Aussie records you've had?
No. I've got all... I think I've got all the 52s. I've got a lot of the... I've got a lot of the 57s except for bench. I think I have all of them, and I would have all the Masters ones in both those weight classes.
Yeah, they don't count. Open only.
Okay, yeah, open only. You know, I also broke the total record.
The under 56 record. One or something?
World total record.
Yeah.
Is that still stand?
No. It's 6.5 kilos more now.
It's Marissa's now?
No, it's actually Joy's after yesterday.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Joy broke it by 0.5 kilo.
Okay, well, I mean, either way, like, more records than Alex and I put together.
I hold most of the Oceania, or all the Oceania except for bench, and most of the Commonwealth except for... Actually, no, Joy would have taken those now. That hurts.
Not a squat. You still got squat.
Still got squat, yeah.
So today we're going to talk about a little bit of Liz's background before powerlifting, so sort of Liz the person, and then we're going to jump in and talk a little bit about actually what it takes mentally to be at the very top, because, you know, as you've already heard, Liz is one of the best in the world at what she does. So, Liz, because you're Australia's best powerlifter, I think people would presume that you had a background in sport or athletics. Did you play sport as a kid?
No, I played no sport as a kid. I was an art nerd, and I tried to avoid all kind of sport of any type.
Until what age?
Well... When I was going out a lot, I liked to look good in my clothing that I was going out in. So
Limited clothing, I assume.
Well, she's from Canberra. You'd have to wear a hood.
No, I'm from the Northern Beaches.
Oh, okay.
So
fair
I actually
enough, yeah.
immigrated from South Africa when I was 11 here to Sydney.
Yeah.
And I lived in DY and Manly, so there was not much clothing. A lot of rollerblading.
Rollerblading.
I did that. I did a little bit of surfing, that sort of thing, but... I joined gyms, and I would train for maybe 2 weeks and then let that lapse, you know what I mean?
Yeah. This is a teenager or through your 20s?
Yeah, through my 20s, till I moved to Canberra.
Right. So I'm actually kind of curious, what type of art did you do?
I actually studied at COFI here. I did painting, drawing. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Which, yeah. I came from my artistic kind of family. As I said, my dad was an opera singer. He was also a Baptist minister. He was a university lecturer. So we all...
You inherited the singing talent.
Not really.
That was a good song.
It was a good effort.
I can't do my opera, but, you know.
It was better than Jules. Shout out to Jules.
Yeah, shout out Jules. Yeah, the second best 57 singer on the show so far, Jules.
I bet she was enthusiastic, though. Jules is always enthusiastic.
She was enthusiastic. Okay. So pretty much no sport and a little bit of gym going. What I find interesting is you told us that during that time, between 15 and about 33, you were basically a party girl.
Yes.
So that's about 20 years that I guess we would consider as powerlifting coaches maybe like the prime time to develop as an athlete that you weren't really doing powerlifting at all. What started you down that path, you know?
Of partying?
Yeah, of partying.
Well, the first time I ever got drunk, I'd actually gone to do a piano recital in front of people.
Yeah. Wait, you did this before this recital?
No, I completely fucked up. My hands started shaking and I got stage fright. And I couldn't play anything. And my mum stood up in front of the whole hall and said, "I just want to say how proud I am of my daughter," and it made me way more embarrassed. And I went out, my best friend took me, and we went and got drunk from that night. That was the first time I ever got drunk.
How old were you?
That reminds me of that Family Guy episode where Peter Griffin can only play piano when he's drunk. Have you seen that one?
No.
He's hilarious.
Anyway, that's you.
Yeah. There's definitely a sweet spot for playing music when you're drunk, because it's like, when you start, it helps you loosen up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you get to the point where you're really digging yourself, and then you continue to really dig yourself, like you think you're getting better and better, but you're getting way, way worse.
It's like dancing in pool as well.
Yeah, exactly like dancing in pool. Alright, so you started then, and did you sort of immediately take off and say, actually, you know, this is it, I dig partying, I dig drinking, or was it sort of just something that you did on and off during that time?
I was a shy person. Like, I used to get quite stressed being in any kind of social thing, and I found that alcohol was great. I met people, all of a sudden I was getting attention, you know what I mean? And I just enjoyed it. But I wouldn't say it was a good lifestyle. Like, that's eventually why I moved to Canberra, to try and get away. Because you get pulled into this world where you only live for the nighttime. Like, I didn't actually do anything during the day, and my whole world was around partying. Like, I would spend $50 on food a week. All the rest of my money went to partying and clothes for partying.
What do you eat for $50 a week?
You eat pasta and you get some tomatoes and some of the tomato sauce and cheese, and that's what you eat.
And that's it.
Yeah.
What were you doing for work around this time?
Retail. So, and I worked in bars as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, hospitality.
It kind of goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
Again, I want to sort of bring it back to art. Was it, you were studying at COFA, so College of Fine Arts. Were they the people you were partying with, fellow artists?
Oh, man. My partying took a whole new level when I went to art school. So growing up on the beaches, the culture is binge drinking, you know what I mean, parties. It was all my friends from school, etc., you know, we were all binge drinking. Like, some of them I look on their Facebook and they're 40 something, they're still doing it. So I'm glad that I got out of it when I did. I mean, I had some really good times. I love music, so I hung out with a lot of bands, and that is a big party lifestyle.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and when I went to COFA, then that was inner city partying. It was even seemed to be worse.
So what, like, is there any sort of particular memory from the times when you were partying that sticks out as being, like, you know, particularly crazy or memorable or fun, like in a good way?
Yeah, well, one time I went out, and we used to go to this club called Springfields, which you had to knock on the door to get in, and I met Sepultura there, which was awesome. Talk there.
No. Oh, yeah. That's his signal that he's
yeah, we something to say. We put our hand up, man.
Okay.
Yeah, we're being very polite.
Because
Liz is a mum, if you interrupt her, she gets very angry.
She gets angry at everything.
So you've gone to Sepultura.
I feel very crazy today. You should have interviewed me last, like, a couple of weeks ago. So I met Sepultura, and I ended up meeting this band from Wollongong called Black Rain, and I was meant to be going home, but I ended up catching a train with this band. They were this full heavy metal band, but they were the nicest guys. But I went missing for like a couple of days. It was a great couple of days.
How old were you?
I was probably about 18.
Okay.
Yeah, my parents eventually moved away from me because,
really?
Yeah, I was trouble.
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, two older brothers, but they're about 10 years older.
Okay. Yeah, well, what did you have to say, Al?
You told me recently a story about how you met your husband, Leon. Do you want to tell everyone that story?
So I was at a party. It was a Zoolander party. They even had a catwalk, so everyone was doing walk-offs. And Leon asked me, he came as the guy that invented the piano key tie, and I was a really, really ridiculously good-looking model.
Right.
And he tried to dance with me, and I was like, I don't do that. And then eventually, I was sitting on the couch with him, and I ended up passing out on him, and my boob fell out. And he looked after me. Did you know that bit?
I didn't know.
I don't know if you should put that one up.
No, that's staying in.
Yeah. We don't have to put a visual of your boob in with the podcast.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. And it was it was funny. He looked after me, and he's totally not. I used to just go out with the worst guys, like pro surfers, pro skaters that weren't very nice to. They weren't very nice guys, and then Leon, he's a good man, you know. He looked after me and covered me up.
How old were you when you two met?
33.
And I was going to ask, is that what caused you to sort of stop partying?
As much, yeah. Yeah. We were still, Leon was pretty wild, believe it or not, when I met him.
Can't imagine that.
I know, nobody can. But not as wild as me. And he calmed me down a lot.
I've just got a question about your favourite drink. Mm-hmm. So what was your favourite drink in your 20s, then in your 30s, and now?
When I first started partying, everyone would drink a hip flask of Southern Comfort and then go into a party. And
SoCo and Coke. Very good.
And then it was bourbon and then vodka.
Hmm. And now?
I like wine and beer now. Very sophisticated.
Matured over the years.
Yes. And you know what? I never used to be able to drink without actually trying to find oblivion, whereas now I drink for enjoyment, you know. It's so different.
How many days a week do you reckon you would have drunk in your 20s?
I would drink. I was in hospitality as well, remember? So Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, you're drinking through the hangover. Sunday sessions, afternoons, and then Mondays... industry night. Well, I wouldn't always do that many, but you'd just kind of be okay again by Thursday.
Yeah. I'm like ashamed. I'm like the worst partier ever.
Yeah,
I don't know if you should be ashamed.
Will's in bed by 10 even when he goes out.
That's good though.
Oh man, 10's a big night.
Only 10
if, yeah, don't talk me up, mate.
Only 10 if the Wallabies are on.
Yeah, 10 if the Wallabies are on, and even then I have a nap at half time.
So I feel like I wasted some of my 20s in some ways, but I was actually still traveling, doing stuff like that, but it could have been spent a bit more. You know, I didn't grow a career or anything like that. But now I'm making up for it. Mm. Now I'm a massive overachiever, trying to do everything, you know.
You said to Alex and I when we were talking about doing this podcast that in some ways powerlifting saved your life.
Yeah.
What did you mean by that?
By the time I was, I moved to Canberra, partying had stopped being fun, and I was just purely chasing not being in reality anymore. So, yeah, I don't understand when people say that. Like, I was not an alcoholic in the way that I had a chemical imbalance. I just was addicted to oblivion, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And everyone around me was, and I needed to get away from that world. And even when I moved to Canberra, I found myself starting to be around those same people again. I was living with my mother. I moved here because my mum lives here in Canberra. And I was walking through the shopping centre, and some people from Fitness First were handing out their thing, and I was thinking, I need to get healthy. And I thought, why not? And I joined the gym, and they gave you a free personal trainer. And the trainer, his name's Josh Birch, very, very tough. Like, he's the guy that got me into CrossFit first of all, and just no nonsense with him. And he showed me, he was the first person I ever met that I wanted to be like, and he was not part of a party lifestyle. Like, he was really a really cool guy, you know what I mean? And he was very strong in his beliefs, and also, if I was in any way hungover, I'd be lying on the ground vomiting, you know what I mean, during his sessions, because he would smash me. And that's exactly what I needed. I just needed a circuit break.
So you said that he got you into CrossFit stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Did you compete in CrossFit?
I did. I got to regionals 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no idea I was strong until I even started. I'd never done anything with a barbell before that.
So I'm guessing during CrossFit you started training with a barbell and realized that you were strong, as you said.
Yes.
Is that what led you to powerlifting?
Yeah, well, actually, after I had Abigail, I decided to do some strength coaching, do some strength training with a coach because I was trying to get strong again for CrossFit.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working with him, he said my numbers were good enough to go to nationals, even though it was only 3 months after Abigail. So I thought, why not? Because the thing I loved about CrossFit was the competing and everyone getting together. It's kind of like that social thing that I was missing out now because I wasn't going out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to this competition and I realized it was the same. It was still a community and I didn't have to do row sprints and I didn't have to do wall balls. And with those things, I was good at gymnastics movements and I was good at the strength stuff. I could keep up with the 70 kilo girls with all that stuff, but not with rowing.
So what year and what month was your first powerlifting competition?
Abby was born 2011, so 2012 February.
And what was your lifts and what was your total?
That's funny. They were about 80 kilo squat, mm-hmm. and 50 kilo bench, and it was less than 100 kilo deadlift. I think it was 97.5.
So about, 237 total? Something like
yeah.
that. Okay.
Are you good with numbers?
Yeah. So she's put
reasonable.
Put over 200 kilos on her total since she started 1 year ago. Was that 6 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
So before we get too far down the rabbit hole with powerlifting, I want to take you right back to what you were saying about moving away from partying. If you don't want to answer this stuff, we can cut it out.
Okay.
But you said you're addicted to oblivion.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to know, was there anything in particular that drove you towards that? Was there like, you know, were you sad or was there something like, you know, were you looking for oblivion because you were dissatisfied with life? What did that mean to you?
Well, yeah, I would say that I was depressed and I was self-medicating, and then as a circle or a whirlpool, you keep waking up and hating yourself, so you want to party because that's fun and you feel better, you know what I mean? You keep being pulled further and further down, and when you're drunk you do stupid things and you hate yourself more. So yeah, I was getting to a point where there was going to be no way out unless I got out and moved away, completely away from all those people.
So you were kind of using drinking to escape your life?
Yes, that was exactly what I was doing. It wasn't fun anymore.
And then you said that your personal trainer that you had was the first person you'd admired outside of your partying lifestyle.
Yeah,
so who were the people?
Parents thing, you know what I mean.
But who were the people that you did admire or that you did look up to when you were in that sort of darker phase of your life?
So I had friends that were artists and musicians. And I admired them, but they were all... It's like we were all in the same whirlpool, you know. They were all getting wasted as well. I don't know if people were as bad as me because I was so fucked up most of the time. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it just... Nights can go for 2 days.
Yeah, and did you admire them as artists or did you admire them as people? Or
both. Like, some people I admired how they... just didn't seem to give a fuck about, you know, normal things, jobs, all that kind of thing that pulls you down. You know, you feel like you're trapped in this lifestyle where you're just working, trying to pay your mortgage, all that sort of thing. You know, I didn't want to be like that, but I also was trapping myself worse, if you know what I mean. Like I was shackled by alcohol and etc.
Was it conscious when you started engaging in weight training and things? Was it conscious to you as a decision that like this was something that you thought could fill the space that partying had? And
no,
not
at all. I didn't even know I was competitive. I had a competitive soul, if you know what I mean. Like when I started competing, I did it more to try and please my trainer, and so just because you said you can be good, and then all of a sudden finding that drive inside me, I think that changed a lot of things. And when I started actually performing well, it also helped my how I started seeing myself. You know, when I quit smoking, I remember the way I did it is by starting to visualize myself as a non-smoker. I never really smoked much, but when I was visualizing myself as a partier that maybe smoked, you know what I mean? That was what I did. So similar to how when you visualize how you're going to lift, it's that's how you can also change your life, is visualize what you want to be. And I don't mean to sound like a hippie or anything, but you know, it's that actually made a big difference for me when I started seeing myself as someone that was healthy and someone that was strong instead of some, you know, party girl. That's when everything started to change.
So is there a moment or a time you remember when it was like you went, actually, I really love doing this?
Lifting?
Yeah.
So I got to Worlds in Suzdal, and it was completely, I don't know how I got there because I couldn't even squat 100 kilos. I was just lucky that not many people wanted to go. And the Russian coach saw me there, and he saw me squatting, and he said, if I coached you, you could be the best squatter in the world. And that just clicked something in my head. Just like some strange guy came up and said that, and it just made me believe it could be true. I enjoyed, and after that, that's when I started actually lifting seriously, and I added volume. I started training with Mike Teixeira.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was, you know, when you actually believe in yourself, it's going to be more fun. If you're there and you're feeling nervous and think that you're not training well, then it's never fun, is it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're going through those shit times when you're training, you're like, why do I even do this?
Most of the time. when I do it, yeah.
Megan and I go through, you know, one day one of us is up, the other day, the other one is. So we're trying to help each other. But, yeah, everyone's going to have a bad week.
Have you ever come across sort of instances of your story replicated in your clients? You know, people who have been in a similar place, or people for whom lifting has really changed their life too?
Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah. I see it so much in females, how showing them that they can find strength, just even physical strength, helps them find strength, you know, in the rest of their lives. I think it's just changing the game for girls. Whereas now we are competing with you guys. We're on the same platform. We're all in a team together, and people will come and watch us just as much as they'll watch you guys. You know what I mean? I love that. That's one of the greatest things about the sport. You know, we are true equals.
Yeah, you go to a local competition and there's as many girls as there are men. Like, there has to be a group dedicated to them.
Exactly.
You know, the last top lifter.
Yeah, we've had our last three competitions here, and the next one in 3 weeks will be, the first session is just girls, and then the afternoon session is just boys.
That's so good.
Like, always been a 50-50 split the last three or four times.
Yeah, and think how many of your clients are girls, you know what I mean? Mm. And they're coming all the time. It's a really good time for lifting.
In fact, in some ways, it's powerlifting is one of the great sports in that respect, because, you know, like, you're the best lifter in Australia, you're a woman, and like, men admire you for your achievements.
Yeah.
And I think that's not something that you see as often in other sports. I think oftentimes men sort of lionize the men who are really good at their sport and don't consider the women's achievements to be equal or to be of equal value. But in powerlifting, it seems to be absolutely a cultural thing that, you know, the women who are the strongest are the strongest, and if they're the best, they really are the best.
Yeah.
You know? And I think maybe because it is such a comparable sport with things like the Wilkes score and stuff, like, you really just see the best athlete as the best athlete rather than the best man or the best woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. It makes me look forward for my daughter, you know, that things like this are happening. Because often people will laugh at the female sport, and it's always put on at a time when people don't want to watch it, you know. But not with powerlifting. It's in the main times.
So if you could give a tiny bit of advice, sorry, Alex, why don't you jump in?
No, it's alright. You start.
You need the conch shell. No, you need a shell.
Alright. So Alex sits back there and picks his nose for 20 minutes at a time during the podcast.
He's been holding his finger up for about...
I thought he was picking his nose with it. Okay, Alex, you say your question.
Is this the Will and Will show, is it?
Oh, God, if only.
Yeah, we'd have no listeners.
Yeah, true.
So, Liz, if you could give some advice to yourself from 20 years ago, what would you say to yourself?
I wrote that question. Sorry, on you go.
Don't do any podcast.
You worded it worse then.
Oh, 20 years ago, I don't know. These days, I'm not afraid to be... have an opinion and be angry about things, and even though...
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Liz gets angry.
Don't get me fucking angry. But it's, just give myself a break. Like, back when I was 18, I remember I felt bad about how I looked. I felt bad about who I was. You know, you're always wishing you were something different, whereas... I would have tried to be a bit... Everybody says this, but, you know, youth is wasted on the young. We don't appreciate what we have when we're that age. I was probably looked the best that I've ever looked when I was 18, and I thought I was ugly. So if I can do that for my daughter, is just make her... I just hope I can make her understand that, you know, she is beautiful, and there will be other girls that are beautiful too. It doesn't make her less beautiful. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And inside and out. There will be people smarter than me. There will be people stronger than me, and it doesn't make me worth less.
In some ways, that's kind of analogous to powerlifting as well. It's that your achievement is your own achievement.
Yes.
And, you know, you can be good or great or better than you were, and yeah. There might still be other people who are better or greater or better than you ever will be.
Always.
But it doesn't mean that what you've done is meaningless.
No. And when I first started breaking records, I held on to those records with my claws. And if anyone was coming close to me, I used to get, like, anxious and stuff. Now I'm like, so what? It's going to happen. Someone's going to take me over. What does it matter? I've held it for this, you know what I mean? And who cares? Some people will never break records, but they will keep lifting their whole life. They'll keep getting themselves better. And that's the important part, isn't it?
They'll break their own records.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I reckon we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back and talk a little bit more about, you know, losing competition.
Weekly weights. Don't get me fucking angry.
Are you going to stab someone, Liz?
I'm going to stab him with your guitar.
Not the guitar, that's an heirloom.
Do you know, I've been trying to learn the guitar and I'm really bad. Look how bad my flexibility is.
You and Megan should have lessons together.
Yeah, she won't.
She's got the best guitar, though.
It's a nice guitar.
Yeah, I think we're going to trim this out. This is important content. Yeah, she's got that. It's a Les Paul Custom.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. You should look it up. It's like,
beautiful.
Yeah.
So her husband bought that and... It looks really nice on their stairs because they've got a beautiful house.
Yeah.
But then he hasn't played it, so she's started learning. She's playing... Who's the Australian that goes out with Nicole Kidman?
Keith Urban.
Yeah, that guy.
She's playing... Okay. Quickly calling out Megan Hinchley for not having guitar lessons. And also Keith Urban for not writing particularly good music. Yeah, let's tag Keith Urban.
Do you reckon he'll listen to the podcast?
Possibly.
Very unlikely.
He'll be impressed by that... Yeah, kind of shitty guitar I just played. Obviously, we're back on air. We're here with Liz Craven, and we've spoken a little bit about her life prior to lifting. Now we want to know a little bit about, what goes on upstairs when you're competing. So you said that when you started powerlifting, you weren't immediately good.
No, I was terrible.
Well, what were the mental hurdles that you had to overcome initially competing?
So I actually had never felt that kind of stress in my life before, except for the time I told you with the piano. And that was, I remember I thought I was sick. I thought that I was getting the flu or I was going to pass out because I was getting lightheaded and heart palpitations, all that kind of thing.
Like, this is while you're warming up or before you're going to go lift?
I can't even remember those competitions because I was in a constant state of panic. And
really?
Yeah. So I would go out, do the lift. I don't know what happened. Would go back. I'd either get it or I didn't. And my first nationals, which was, say, 6 months into my lifting career,
mm-hmm.
I remember I was kept thinking I heard my name being called, so I had to go up on the platform, but it wasn't being called. It was just me panicking. So I was pretty bad, and it just took a lot of competitions for me to start recognizing I'm feeling this every time. This is obviously nerves, and you know, once you start being familiar with it, it's less scary.
So do you still have that same anxiety now?
I will always have nerves, but now I have learned to enjoy them. Like I've learned to enjoy the adrenaline, which before it was, I remember throwing up before my first squat, so many comps because I was so nervous. And that's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes me think of Eminem and Lose Yourself. You know, when he goes to spew before he does his rap battle. Yeah, sorry,
yeah,
carry
that was
on.
Me.
Yeah.
And
so far, Liz has been Peter Griffin and Eminem.
Two pop culture icons. Yeah, carry on.
And so once I started understanding what was happening, then I could start working on it and just learning to try and be present was the hardest thing, because so many times I couldn't remember the actual lifts or what I did wrong. I had to go back and look at video and then I would kind of work it out, but it took a lot of competitions and quite a few years.
So Liz, what advice would you give to anyone out there who struggles with anxiety issues around competition?
So what I started to do is in the gym, I would start visualizing myself being on the platform, and every single lift I did, I treated it the same. You have to really focus. You can't just go train in the gym and then hope that it's all going to be okay on the platform, especially not if you know that you're susceptible to nerves, if you know what I mean. So I would walk up, I'd treat the squat the same if it was just the bar or if it was, you know, over 100 kilos, and that started to work, because when I walked out on the platform, I knew exactly how to go about it, and even if I was nervous, my body knew what to do. So that was the first thing, and that's helped me be present on the platform. So that's something I would recommend. Practice, and also practicing correct technique over and over again instead of just repetition. I find that's something that people do. They think practicing is just do a squat as many times as possible over and over again, and they don't actually fine-tune their squat. They don't work out why they're doing things wrong. They just keep squatting. And what they're doing then is they're practicing bad technique. And no matter what they think when they walk out on the platform, that bad technique is going to come out under heavy load. So fine-tune your squat, practice correctly, and imagine that you're on the platform every time you're lifting.
So essentially develop a routine and a technique that's going to be useful when you compete.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like a ritual, you know. I used to do that foot stampy thing, but then it started hurting my legs. So.
What about approaching nerves? So like, other than just performing the lifts, what about, like, what do you do to stop you getting nervous now?
Yeah.
Or what have you done in the past that's helped you stop getting nervous?
Lately, I've been doing some breathing. So I work on relaxing my diaphragm as I breathe, and that has been helping me a lot. Another thing is you have to accept that you are going to have negative thoughts. You are going to think this could be heavy, or what if I fail? And instead of fighting that thought, the best thing for me has been going, there's that thought, and just letting it wash over me, and then try and bring in some thoughts why I will succeed. So I'll think, I've hit this in the gym, or my training's been going well, I'm a good squatter. I'm a confident squatter. And reminding myself to be confident, it's almost that, fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. You start telling yourself these things, and that don't fight that self-doubt, because that'll just take you away from focusing on the actual movement. Just let it wash over you and remind yourself why you will make it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So... this is kind of cute. I'm giving my mum a shout out. She
such a loser.
She listens.
Hey, Artie.
Hi, Artie.
The goat.
The goat.
Yeah.
The goat mum.
I can't believe you explained to me what goat meant. For goodness sake.
Yeah. Everyone only calls her. So something my mum must have said to me when I was like 5 and has said since was, it's okay to have butterflies so long as they're flying in formation.
Yeah.
Right. It's okay to feel nervous so long as you can put that to use.
Yes.
Do you now feel that sort of pre-competition nerves as just like your body getting prepared? Like, do you try and harness that energy, or do you just confront it and then go on?
I definitely try and harness it. I said this before, but one time I was at the Strength Fortress, one of their competitions, and one of the new girls that was competing, I said to her, "How are you feeling?" And she said, "I feel great. I'm loving the adrenaline." And that kind of blew my mind, because I'd never thought to actually enjoy it.
Mm.
And it just changed the way I viewed the nerves. I thought, yeah, well, actually, it's the same as excitement, isn't it?
Yeah.
So then I started feeling happy. And I remember I started saying to myself, it's on, you know, that feeling, and hyping myself up more even for the lifts. And that's been going well for me lately.
So you have this running joke where you call yourself a gangster, but can we get the origins of that?
Well, it's all Megan Hinchley's fault. So we were actually competing here. This is back in the day when there was like no room, remember?
When John was here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Megan, she went out and she had missed her first bench, like totally missed it. And then she also missed her second. I think the first one actually, her butt came off the bench. The second one, she missed it from strength. And the third, she was about to bomb, and it looked like she was going to cry. And JP and I were there, and I'm like, "Mate, we have to pull it together." So we're doing this big Braveheart speech, and we're like, "You've got to be a gangster. You've got to pull it together." And she put her headphones on, and she started nodding her head, and she walked out, and she freaking left it out like a gangster. And since then, we've been using the gangster joke, because obviously we're not gangsters, okay? I'm a 43-year-old woman. I'm a mum, and I have never popped a cap in anyone's ass.
It's good to have that on record.
Although, not that you remember.
Yes. Not that I remember, who knows.
Yeah. All those parties.
Could be some dead people around. So
it's official, Liz's bark is worse than her bite.
It's true.
So now that that's happened, you hear the words, like, "I'm a gangster," and does that, like, flick a switch with you? Like when you're competing?
Yeah. I some people will call me arrogant or something. I have a certain confidence when I lift now, because I've proved to myself over and over again that I can bring the goods, you know what I mean? I at first I wasn't, and then all of a sudden I remember I was always failing my third squat, and I would always say to myself, "I fail my third squat." And then one day I said, "No, you make your third squat," and I made my third squat. So now I bring a confidence, which I guess some people might see as arrogance. I love Kanye when I'm lifting, because he's got that same kind of arrogant feel about him. Because if you're walking out on that platform and you don't believe that you're going to lift that maximum,
no chance.
You're not going to get it. You know, there's no chance. You will feel buckled. You'll walk out and you'll go, "This is heavy." And then you'll just sink to the bottom, you know. You won't even try.
Yeah, the boys from Melbourne Strength Culture, Charlie and Jamie, they always say, "I was born to make lifts."
Yeah.
That's what they say before they lift. I think that's really interesting, like,
yeah,
to think, like, you walk on the platform and all you're supposed to do is make a lift. So, like, yeah, you need to think, like, "I'm here to make this lift. That's the only reason I'm in this building right now."
Do your job.
I think that really, yeah, do your job. I think that really carries through.
It does, yeah. I remember Susie Hartwig, she told me they were messing her around. This was Equipped World. And so they kept timing her out, and she had her knees wrapped, so she couldn't feel her legs. But she just went, I'm Susie Hartwig, and I make all my squats. And she walked out, and she got her squat, you know. Yeah. She didn't let it faze her. She knew what to do. Mm. And that resonated with me. So I think I'm Liz Craven. I make my squats. I'm Liz. And once I was here at this gym too, and there was a guy here, and I was looking nervous, obviously, and he goes, it's all right. You're Liz freaking Craven. I was like, yeah.
The thing is, it's not cute.
It's very tough.
That's awesome.
I don't think, though, that there's elite athletes anywhere. Like, you look at the best basketballers when they're taking a shot under pressure, you know, a rugby player kicking a conversion, like, you know, Kelly Slater surfing. Like, nobody who is truly elite is anything less than completely confident in their abilities.
Yeah.
Because I think the second you're doubting your ability to execute, it actually influences how you go about doing stuff. And it's the same in other fields, whether you're, you know, playing music or making a speech to people. It's when you're worrying about the outcome, it takes away from your actual investment in the process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right,
you
know? Yes.
And I think something like powerlifting is very much like that, because you have to be so in the moment, and you have to just execute with maximum effort. If you're expending any of your energy worrying about what might happen if it goes wrong, then it will.
It goes wrong, yeah.
You know, when you're in the top 1%.
So much of lifting is timing and rhythm as well. So if you think, I need to, because you walk out and you go, this is my max, so I need to get way tighter, and I need to be really careful with this one, you're going to change everything. You know, you just try and hit it the same as every other time and just push harder.
Yeah.
Position, pressure. Don't be a pussy.
All those things.
So, let's talk about when you're competing on the world stage. What...
Do we have to?
What's it like to be surrounded by the elite, and what makes it different to competing at a local competition?
At a local competition, I can just kind of YOLO a lot more. I don't need to be thinking about positions. You know, at Worlds you're just trying to make as many lifts as possible, build that total, whereas you can go for it a bit more. And also, I don't really have much competition in Australia, whereas in Worlds or at Worlds it's a different feeling, because I know I can be beaten, so I have to try really hard to not focus on that and not look at the scoreboard and not, you know, start obsessing about where I am and just try and make my lifts the same as if I was here. So I'm in a way, I'm not used to that kind of pressure.
Mm.
It's good for me, but it would be nice if I could feel that a bit more at home, you know. Come on, girls.
do you find that you're sort of a very trusting athlete? Like, you know, I know JP often handles you. When he's looking after you, are you happy to just switch off and be an athlete, or do you get anxious about, you know, strategy and things like that?
I don't do strategy. I just know I can lift what I can lift. He can do that if he wants to, but I trust, but I will usually give my input, like, I think I've got 5 more, or, you know, or, yeah, and on a day I know when things are on, if I'm going to be able to make more than I usually would. You know, I've done RPE singles at RPE 8 for over 2 years, so I know what's in me on a day usually.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And are there lifters that you compete against internationally that you really admire, or that you find intimidating to compete against, or anything like that?
Oh, I love Marissa. She's my favourite.
Why do you love Marissa?
We're just very similar. We get on well. Like, we talk all the time over Messenger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're both mums. We're both the same age. And we have the same sense of humour. But, whenever she's there, it's going to be fun. Like, we hang out the back and we dance. So she sent me a message going, it just wasn't the same without you there. It was just meh. But, you know, Joyce, she's an interesting one out the back. She's very, very quiet. She'll read a book. between really? Yeah, she reads a book between lifts. Yeah, and
which country does Joyce represent? Sorry,
Britain. She just won. She's the new world champion.
Oh wow! Congratulations, yeah, so she...
Joy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Congratulations, Joy. And Joyce, if there's
Joyce is a lovely girl as well. Yeah. But
tell I haven't been watching as much IPF Worlds as maybe I should have. Yeah, carry on.
But Joy has a huge deadlift, so she got the 195.5 at 52 kilos, so that's big.
No belt.
No belt, no knee sleeves, no wrist straps. So Sophia Loft, who is, has been 3 times world champion. She's mm-hmm. actually pregnant at the moment. Okay. Congratulations, Sophia.
Is she going to come back with mum strength?
Yeah, I reckon. All those growth hormones.
Yeah.
And she might be 57s, actually. I think she was thinking about moving up. Joy just told me she was going to move up.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's Olga, the Russian. She's always...
Big bench.
Yeah, she's got a big bench. She, like, you watch her, and every time she's at Worlds, everyone goes, oh, I don't think she has much more in her first squat, because it's slow down, slow up. But every other squat is exactly the same tempo. So you never know what Olga's bringing to the table. And there's a new Ecuadorian lady. Well, she's not new. She's come from Equips, and she's very strong as well.
Yeah, wow. Okay. And what's it like to you to have... Like, well, I should say first, are any of these people that you actually sort of idolised when you first started competing internationally?
I went to Worlds before I even knew it was like a thing, and there were stars, and you know what I mean? But then... You know, Jennifer Thompson... Oh, Kim Walford, she blew my mind when I first met her, and she was pulling over 200 kilo deadlifts and nobody else was. She was so intense. I loved how she screams at everybody after she deadlifts. I'm like, yeah, yell at me.
She started emulating her. Yeah. And you just stopped doing it around deadlifts and now you yell at everyone all the time.
Yeah, she set me on my path of rage. Righteous anger.
Yeah.
She's very cool to watch. I mean, everyone loves to watch Kim. And Susie Hartwig,
yeah.
I was chasing her. I remember when I first started lifting here in Australia, though. Who's it? Mary, yeah. Mary Macken. I was chasing her squat, which she was the only one squatting around 120, and she had the record.
Yeah.
I thought I'd never be able to get it. And she was the first woman to do a triple bodyweight deadlift.
In Australia?
Yeah.
Cool.
Because the reason I asked that is, what's it like to have people that were your idols now your rivals? Like, and did that ever sort of flick a switch in your head where you went, wow, you know, these are now my peers?
Well, I still find it hard to believe that, you know, that I got to this level, because all I did really was train hard and I guess have a vision of what I could be and then keep working. So a lot of us came to this point at the same time. So mm-hmm. we were equals. I still don't see myself on the same level as Kim Walford. I mean, she's been lifting for 17 years, or Jen Thompson. I mean, oh my God, like, and winning. So she is a veteran. Like, I'm sure no matter what is thrown at her, she would know how to react to that, whereas I'm still 6 years, I'm still a bit of a adolescent, if you know what I mean.
Mm. So you talk about how you always approach making lifts and you're always thinking about making lifts. What happens when you don't make your lifts? How do you react, and how has this changed from when you started to now?
Well, sometimes one of the hardest things to deal with in competition is you miss a lift and you get that doom that starts creeping over you, and you feel like you want to leave. Why not? You know, nothing else is going to go wrong, and you have to. That's those negative thoughts, and then you have to start thinking, well, I am going to make the next lift because of these reasons. It's still quite hard. I missed my last, for the first time in ages, I missed my last squat at my last competition. And JP made me go lie down with my feet up and just you know, breathe and start thinking about bench. So I just had to completely get it out of my mind. Otherwise, that can ruin your whole comp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see that happen a lot. Then people just give up because they think the total's gone. But that doesn't matter. You can PB your bench, you can PB your deadlifts, and that's still something, isn't it?
Mm. So would you say that you're able to overcome a missed lift better now than previously?
Much better. I just wanted to leave. I even wanted to leave before I started competing. But still, these days, before I compete, I start questioning, why do I do this? You know, I still get that feeling, but then I could ignore it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
One of your pet peeves is when people call you arrogant. And yeah,
and it's not me.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, you've sort of said you like to approach the bar with arrogance, but then when you talk about these people that surround you, you're obviously humble. So I want to know, what is it that people call you arrogant for, and why does it upset you?
So I find that people will call me arrogant if I say any of the things I've achieved or done. This is not everybody, but some people do this. If I am, say, on a list of people, it's arrogant to be on the list with other people that are not doing as well as me, that kind of thing. And I don't understand that because I started out just as bad or just as weak as everybody else. You know, is that the right thing to say, weak?
Yeah.
You know, everybody starts, you know, nobody starts good, right? Yeah. I think that's like a big thing in powerlifting is everybody has to sort of go from shit to mediocre before they get even remotely good.
Yeah.
And then they may never get great, but it's like there's no shame in not being good.
Yeah.
And it's not a character judgment to say you're not good because that's what you should expect if you haven't worked yet.
Yeah, you're just in a different part of the journey.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that I'm part of the community, and because I've gotten a medal or whatever at Worlds, I shouldn't be isolated from that. I should be, you know, I'm not arrogant because I want to be included with everybody, and it's that tall poppy syndrome that if I say that any of my achievements, I'm being arrogant, but why? You know, I've worked hard for that. I started from scratch at the age of 37, 3 months after having a baby, and I have become one of the top in the world, but not through cheating or anything like that. I've just worked hard, and I share my knowledge with people, so I don't understand why people have a go at me about that.
So you're just proud of what you've been able to achieve, essentially?
I'm amazed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm blown away that any of this has ever happened, you know, and so sometimes I want to tell people because I'm amazed,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you should be proud.
Yeah, well, it's not that I just want to walk around with pride filling me. I just like, can you believe it? You
Liz,
know what I mean?
Liz has her silver medal from Worlds on right now.
I do. And, you know, I was unpacking my backpack and there was a gold medal in it, and Leon's like, oh, do you just keep that so you can show people?
Actually, I think one of the best things about Powerlifting Australia is that their bronze medals look so similar to their gold ones. You know, so it's like double your money, basically.
Yeah.
It's like, if I'm not coming first, which is most of the time, then I'm like, I'm just going to shoot for third and, you know, lie, basically. Yeah.
But you know what? You never know what could happen. You just keep working.
Yeah, totally.
You don't know. You
yeah.
could end up the strongest in the room.
Unlikely with you.
Yeah, maybe.
It's pretty called strong, though, because
yeah.
Wilkes or total, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
There's no Wilkes in the jungle, blah, blah.
there's also no barbells.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Or
she
total.
Says the lightweight.
Yeah.
You haven't been,
yeah, another
peeve
is when people go, you know, the Wilkes isn't correct and your Wilkes would be lower. And I'm like, well, it's still fucking higher than yours, mate. Sorry.
That was a little arrogant.
It was. No wonder people call me arrogant.
So, well, no, this is a curious question then. Is there a line that you think that you could draw between what is just being proud of yourself for what you've done and for being arrogant, and where is it?
If I was to start thinking that I was better than everybody else and deserves preferential treatment, then I think that's arrogant. I just want to be treated the same.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, yeah, I want to be... I want to feel ashamed to say what I've done, what I've achieved. Mm. And if I was in America, I'd pretty much be wearing a T-shirt saying all of my achievements, you know what I mean? It's just... Do you find that in Australia? Is that tall poppy...
I think tall poppy syndrome is a thing, but at the same time, I think for the... Actually, this is the reverse. I've got another point to make. But yeah, I do think tall poppy syndrome is definitely a thing in Australia. I don't think we're comfortable embracing the achievements of others, and I'm not sure why, but in some cases I think people don't like acknowledging that other people are great because they feel like saying somebody's better than me is diminishing themselves.
Yes.
You know, and I personally don't think that's the case. I think it's one of the best character traits when you can admire other people for what they've achieved. And I think it's really generous of people who can do that.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. It's really mature of people who can do that. Mm. And I also, I'm not going to be the best for very long, much longer. You know what I mean? Why not be proud of it now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You gotta be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be gone. And then I'm going to be that annoying old lady on the bus showing people photos of myself at Worlds.
Yeah. What's funny is, this was the other point I had to make, is for the most part, we have this great community where many of the very best lifters make themselves accessible to lifters who aren't good yet, you know, lifters who are objectively bad. But it's true. Like, you walk out the back of a local meet and the lifters who are good lifters aren't hogging a rack and telling you to piss off, you know.
Yeah.
They're there patting you on the back for making a lift,
yeah,
you know, that looked hard. Or,
we all,
you know,
cheer each other.
Yeah, and like, you know, just because you're cheering them from 150 Wilks points above them doesn't mean that, like, yeah, it doesn't...
You're
make
not being
you
condescending,
at all.
You know.
No, not at all. It's a genuine...
Be.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the great things about powerlifting is that, you know, it's a bit like when you go to Worlds, like, you're with your peers, you're competing against people who are truly your rivals, but you can go to a competition and still just be celebrating the achievement of others and competing only for yourself, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I came into Megan Hinchley's... I came into her weight class. She never resented me, you know what I mean? I was 57 when I started.
Mm.
She's always just been really happy for anything I've achieved. And one of our best experiences was both getting to go to Worlds together last year. And it was fun.
Yeah.
Megan had fun. Megan didn't sleep for about a week.
Partying?
Yeah. Well... We thought it'd be a really good idea to get four big cans of Red Bull because we were a bit tired and we had them at Worlds during the comp, and both of us couldn't sleep for at least 2 days. And Megan, it stretched out to, like, with the help of karaoke, stretched out to about almost 2 weeks.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Very good.
All right, we're going to take another quick break and then we're going to come back with the four questions that tell us everything we need to know about a person.
Oh, God.
Weekly Weights.
Welcome back to Weekly Weights. We're going to hit Liz up with the four questions that tell us everything you need to know about a person. Question one, if you could take anyone to dinner, dead or alive, who would it be?
I didn't think of an answer for this one.
We'll come back to this one. Who is your favourite athlete of all time?
Well, I first of all had to think of any sport, and I've decided Serena Williams is my favourite athlete of all time.
And why was that, Liz?
Well, I watched a movie, and her force of will is amazing. I remember seeing she played the American Open, and that she was booed the whole time because of racism, and she still freaking won, and I thought that is some steel in her character, and I love that.
The first thing you said was that she has a big bum.
That was what I was thinking. Yeah. Huge.
Mate,
bum.
She has a huge butt.
As soon as we go on air, you got all professional again.
I did.
Yeah.
I got my tone. My mum tone.
She's a power athlete.
Oh, mate.
Yeah.
Imagine her squatting.
She would be good at powerlifting.
She would be great.
Well, is it not Serena Williams, Anna Mears, the cyclist, who has like giant quads. Have you seen, she was squatting like 160 or something for fives or whatever, like to a box high,
wow.
But like unbelievable leg strength.
And she has a really high max jump too.
Yeah, I can believe it. She'd be so... Yeah, anyway, crazy athlete. The question, the first one was, who are you going to take to dinner? Have you thought about it?
I don't know why, but Gorbachev came to mind.
As in, like, Soviet leader Gorbachev.
I don't know why. It just came to my mind. It'd be interesting to hear about how things were during the Cold War from the other side, you know.
Was Gorbachev the one who was looking over the Soviet Union when they, like, disbanded and they were taking down the Berlin Wall, or was that...
I'm not sure. I just remember he was the... during the Cold War, he was the head of the Soviet Union.
Okay, yeah.
Him or Jim Morrison?
Jim
too. Very opposite answers.
Very different. All right. Question number three is, which movie or television character are you most like?
Me most like... Have you seen Kill Bill?
Uma Thurman?
Yeah. I look a lot like her too.
You like stabbing people.
Yeah, well, that's in my mind, that's what I would like to be. I don't think I'm actually that violent in real life, but...
Just with your words?
Just with my words, yeah.
And your arrogance.
So freaking arrogant.
All right, and then the last question... If your life was a montage, what music would it be set to?
Shine On You Crazy Diamond. That's one of my all-time favourite songs. And it could have many different, you know, moods. It's a long song. I hopefully will live for a long time.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks so much for joining us, Liz. So I'm Will Berkman at w.berkmanpt.
I'm Alex Hayes at alexhayes_lift. Liz, do you want to tell everyone where they can find you?
LizPowerlifts at Gmail or LizPowerlifts on Instagram.
I feel like if you're listening to this show, you probably already follow Liz on Instagram.
Yeah, but Liz, I'd like to get you to read one of our reviews. Slightly good. all right, you can read this one from. Can you tell us who it's from as well?
Which one?
The one that it's the top one on your screen now.
I was going to say it's from Love It.
It's from Girl Power.
From Girl Power 2018. So much knowledge. Good looking chaps too. Smart and good looking. If only they weren't gay.
I wonder who that was.
I
reckon it was Tommy.
Do you reckon Tommy Cumberworth made a Girl Power 2018?
Actually, I reckon it was Tommy.
I really like the use of the word chaps.
Yeah, that's why we think it's Tommy, because he's British.
Tommy would say something like, he'd butter us up and then bring us down the last minute.
Alternatively, we actually do have a female fan, one. It's not my mum. All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.
Weekly weights, get your chest up. Weekly weights, drop in. Weekly weights, sit back. Oh, weekly weights, you're pathetic, useless.
Weekly weights, weekly weights, keep your chest up. Weekly weights, sit back. Weekly weights, drop in. Weekly weights, you're hopeless, useless.